Welcome to the Deep Dive. We're here to cut through the noise and get you up to speed on the really critical topics shaping things today. And today, we are jumping headfirst into, well, the often unpredictable world of business. You know the drill. Disruptions pop up. Think unexpected labor strikes, maybe those persistent talent shortages we keep hearing about, or even something huge like a global pandemic. They can hit companies really hard. Now, when we talk contingency plans, usually, you know, our minds jump to IT disaster recovery, maybe financial stability stuff, but there's this absolutely vital piece often overlooked, and it's fundamental staffing.
Exactly. And what's really interesting is that this deep dive, it's all focused on contingency planning in staffing. And just to be clear, this isn't some theoretical thing anymore. It's really moved from being, you know, a good idea to something that's mission critical, an absolute necessity for any organization wanting to maintain operational continuity.
Operational continuity, right.
Yeah.
And staying competitive.
And competitive agility, yeah. Especially when the unexpected happens, because it will happen. The core idea, really, is acknowledging that your people are your most valuable asset. Their availability, their capability, that's fundamental to resilience. Without them, nothing else works.
That makes perfect sense. So for you listening, our mission today is pretty clear. We want to unpack the proactive strategies. How do you maintain essential workforce operations, even when these unforeseen challenges hit? The goal is to help you build a workforce that's robust, adaptable, and yeah, ready for pretty much anything. Okay, so let's start with the basics. When we say staffing contingency planning, what exactly are we talking about? What does that mean?
Yeah, good question. In a nutshell, it's about proactively developing your strategies, your protocols, and having the resources ready, all designed specifically to make sure a business can keep its essential workforce operations running, no matter what kind of personnel disruptions come along.
Okay, personnel disruptions. What kind of disruptions are we actually anticipating here? I mean, it's got to be more than just someone calling in sick, right?
Oh, far more. Yeah. Think about the sheer range of things we've seen. Labor strikes, obviously they can halt everything. Sudden resignations, especially key leaders leaving. That creates critical voids. Health emergencies, like COVID-19 showed us, leading to mass absenteeism, even things like regulatory shutdowns impacting certain departments.
Wow. Okay. That's a lot.
And there's more. Seasonal surges in demand that you might struggle to meet, geopolitical issues affecting, say, international teams. Those persistent talent shortages in key roles, nursing, IT, logistics, making hiring a nightmare, or even tech failures that knock out your HR systems. The whole point is getting businesses ready to pivot, to adapt with minimal interruption, you know, not just reacting when the crisis hits. It's about building that flexibility in.
That paints a really vivid picture of the variety of challenges. Okay, so given all that, the next question is, why now? Staffing's always been tricky, hasn't it? What's different today that makes this so mission critical?
Right. If we zoom out a bit, there are probably four key reasons why this is absolutely critical right now. First, it's the labor market volatility. I mean, the post-pandemic job market.
Yeah.
It really showed us how fragile staffing pipelines can be. We saw record quit rates, the great resignation, all that. Employee expectations have fundamentally shifted. What people want from work is different.
Definitely seeing that.
And we still have these significant lingering shortages of skilled labor in crucial sectors. Think nursing, logistics, IT. It makes staffing a constant moving target. Just can't rely on the old ways.
Yeah, that volatility. Everyone's feeling it. Are there specific industries where it's like particularly intense?
Oh, for sure. Healthcare, as I mentioned, is facing just unprecedented burnout and shortages, particularly nurses. It's a real crisis. Logistics, manufacturing, they're struggling to find skilled tradespeople, truck drivers. And that has knock-on effects across the entire supply chain. It's not just about finding someone anymore. It's finding the right skills in a really tight market. Okay, second big reason, operational continuity. Downtime from staffing gaps, it costs a fortune. Think about manufacturing. A single day of halted production because you don't have the people. That can easily mean millions in losses.
Millions, just from one day.
Yeah, millions. Lost revenue, wasted materials, missed deadlines. It adds up incredibly fast. And in healthcare, understaffing isn't just about longer waits. It directly impacts patient care. That's critical, potentially life or death stuff. We saw hospitals during COVID peaks having to stop non-emergency procedures because they just didn't have the staff.
Right, the consequences are severe.
Third, there's compliance and risk mitigation. Think about industries like food processing, transportation, public services. They operate under really strict rules, right? Staffing gaps there aren't just inefficient. They can lead to huge fines, legal trouble, even losing your license to operate. It's about following the law to avoid serious penalties.
So it's not just about efficiency, it's about staying compliant.
Exactly. And finally, number four, brand and reputation management. Look, when a company isn't prepared and it fails to deliver on its promises because of staffing issues, that damages credibility. Clients notice, partners notice, the public notices when a company stumbles.
Yeah, you remember those stories.
Totally. Imagine a big retailer whose customer service lines are jammed during the holidays because they're understaffed, or a vital public service just isn't available. That kind of failure can really harm brand perception, customer loyalty. It becomes a public trust issue, not just a financial one.
Okay, that really drives home the stakes, both short-term and long-term. So we get why it's so vital, but what actually goes into one of these plans? What are the key components, the building blocks?
Yeah, a really solid plan has about 8 essential elements, and they kind of build on each other. It all starts with risk assessment. This is where you really identify your vulnerable spots in staffing. And it's not just about the C-suite. You got to ask, which positions are truly mission critical? Which departments always seem understaffed? Are there single points of failure? You know, that one person who knows how a critical system works.
Ah, the tribal knowledge holder.
Exactly. Many companies find their biggest risk isn't a strike, but maybe that one IT person leaving suddenly. It's about digging deep. Okay, once you know your risks, next step is scenario planning. This is where you forecast potential disruptions. Imagine different situations. A big labor strike, maybe a competitor poaching a bunch of your key people, a natural disaster hits your main office, or just high absenteeism during flu season. For each scenario, you need to think through the likely impacts and map out your fallback staffing options. This is the what-if stage.
Getting creative with the potential problems.
Pretty much. Third element, resource mapping. This means keeping a live database of all your potential talent sources. That includes internal folks, cross-trained employees, high potentials. It includes external staffing partners, temp agencies you trust. Also, think about remote workers, gig workers, maybe even retirees who could come back short-term. It's a dynamic inventory, not just a static list. Fourth, cross-training programs. Now, this might seem obvious, right? But the key insight here is it's not just about covering shifts. It's about building what some call a T-shaped workforce. People deep in their specialty, but broad enough to pivot and help elsewhere.
T-shaped. I like that. Deep and broad.
Exactly. We've actually seen companies cut downtime in critical roles by up to 40% just by investing in targeted, measurable cross-training. Way more effective than just relying on temps sometimes.
That's a huge impact. Okay, so building internal flexibility is key. What about bringing people in from outside?
Right. That leads to number 5, temporary staffing contracts. You need pre-negotiated relationships with agencies known for rapid deployment. These aren't just names in a Rolodex you call in a panic. They're established partnerships. You've vetted them. They know you. They can send people fast. That relationship is crucial.
Makes sense. Have it ready before you need it.
Precisely. 6th element, digital workforce tools. Using workforce management software is really key here. Good software tracks who's available, where they are, what skills they have in real time. Some can even suggest the best way to redeploy people when gaps appear. It moves you from being reactive to, well, more proactive. 7th is a solid communication framework. You absolutely need a clear, predefined plan for how you communicate during a disruption. Who's the point person in each department? Have internal and external messages drafted beforehand. Keep updated contact lists for everyone, including those backup staffing agencies. Clear communication stops panic.
Yeah, confusion makes everything worse.
Definitely. And finally, the 8th element, and this is critical, a review and update cycle. You have to revisit these plans regularly. Quarterly is good, or definitely after any major workforce event happens, because your business changes, the market changes, your people change. A static plan is almost as dangerous as having no plan at all. It has to stay current.
Keep it alive. Okay, that's a fantastic breakdown of the building blocks. But, you know, moving from knowing the elements to actually doing it, that's often the hard part. How do organizations actually build and implement this step by step?
Yeah, putting it into practice, it's generally a 7-step process to build this strategy from the ground up, taking you from assessment right through to making it part of the culture. Step 1, form a workforce continuity task force. This really needs to be cross-functional. Get leaders from HR, operations, finance, legal, comms. Get them all in a room.
So it's not just an HR thing?
Definitely not. It's a business survival thing. This task force oversees the whole process, from identifying risks to setting policy. Step 2, conduct a staffing vulnerability audit. This is where you really dive into your workforce data. Where are disruptions most likely? Where would they hurt the most? You can use tools like heat maps or risk matrices to visualize this, highlighting those high-priority, high-vulnerability areas.
Okay, data-driven identification.
Exactly. Step 3, draft role-specific contingency plans. For those high-priority roles you identified, get granular. Outline the expected impact if that role is vacant, name specific backup people, internal or external, estimate how long it would really take to hire someone externally, and set benchmarks for what level of productivity needs to be maintained during the disruption.
So detailed plans for the most critical spots.
Precisely. Step 4, establish bench talent and partnerships. This is about actively building those relationships before you need them. On-demand staffing agencies, fractional or part-time experts, maybe networks of retired alumni, online freelancer platforms.
Like building a reserve team.
That's a great way to put it. Pre-vet them, get contracts in place. It minimizes that scramble time when a crisis actually hits.
Yeah.
Step 5, train for flexibility. This is putting those cross-training ideas into action. Shadowing programs to find pathways for learning new skills. You want to build that adaptability, especially in operational roles, so people can step up and managers know who's capable of what.
Making flexibility a reality.
Right. Step 6, stress test the plan. This is absolutely crucial. You have to simulate disruptions, run drills, maybe quarterly, role play scenarios, see how quickly information flows, how fast people can be redeployed, measure the actual impact.
Like a fire drill, but for staffing.
Exactly. This is where you find the hidden flaws. A plan can look great on paper, but the simulation shows you what really works or doesn't under pressure. And finally, step 7, build the plan into your culture and onboarding. This is the long game. Make sure managers, employees know where the plans are, what the role is, why it matters. Make it part of onboarding for new HR folks, new leaders. It needs to become ingrained in how the organization operates, not just a binder on a shelf.
Okay, that's a clear roadmap. So we have the what, the why, the how. Where is this actually making a difference? Let's look at some real-world examples across different industries. And, you know, how is technology changing this whole landscape?
Absolutely. The impact is really clear when you look at specific sectors. Take healthcare. During the height of COVID, we saw hospitals without strong contingency plans forced to cancel elective surgeries, even close down units. They just didn't have the staff. But those that had pre-existing deals with travel nurse agencies or well-managed internal flow pools, they were much better able to maintain critical services, even under immense pressure. It showed real resilience.
A stark difference.
Definitely. Or look at logistics and warehousing. Global supply chains are so sensitive to labor issues. Companies like FedEx, Amazon, they don't just rely on hiring seasonal peaks anymore. They're building surge capacity right into their contracts with staffing vendors for warehouses. That helps ensure they can fulfill orders, even during those really rare, unpredictable events, you know, the black swan type things.
Planning for the truly unexpected.
Right. In manufacturing, think about skilled roles like machinists. If they strike or a key group leaves suddenly, production can just stop. So smart firms are using predictive analytics now, better succession planning, to see these gaps coming. They might actively train apprentices internally or pre-vet external contractors so they're ready to step in almost immediately. It's about anticipation.
Getting ahead of the problem.
Mm-hmm. And even in the public sector, essential services, snowplow drivers, transit workers, sanitation. You can't easily replace them overnight. Municipalities that have really thought this through maybe have specific plans tied to union contracts or mutual aid agreements with nearby towns. They're far better positioned to keep essential services running during a walkout. It's about public safety and continuity.
Okay, these examples really highlight the practical value. Now, you mentioned technology earlier. How are advanced tools really changing the game here? It sounds like it's way beyond just spreadsheets now.
Oh, light years beyond spreadsheets. Yeah, modern workforce planning relies heavily on tech to make contingency planning much more responsive, much more data-driven. For instance, you've got AI-powered workforce analytics. These tools can actually spot subtle patterns, increases in absenteeism, signs of burnout risk, even predict resignation likelihood.
Seriously, predict resignations?
Yeah, based on aggregated, anonymized data patterns, you give leaders incredibly early warning, so maybe they can intervene before someone quits or a team gets overloaded. Then there's real-time labor market data. Tools like Lightcast, LinkedIn Talent Insights. They let you see what's happening with talent availability in specific regions or for specific skills right now. So you can source proactively, seeing where talent pools are shrinking or growing, even before a crisis forces your hand.
Wow, that's powerful.
It really is. We also have automated scheduling platforms. Think Deputy, UKG, Shiftboard. They're not just for making the weekly roster anymore. They allow for super fast schedule changes and communication when emergencies hit. You can redeploy available staff almost instantly through the platform.
streamlining the response.
Exactly. And finally, a huge one, talent cloud networks. Platforms like Upwork Enterprise or Fiverr Business have been game changers. Businesses can tap into skilled freelancers and specialists globally, often within hours. It provides incredible flexibility and speed for short-term or specialized needs without all the traditional hiring overhead, like having a global bench on demand.
That's incredible. Technology is clearly enabling a much faster, smarter response. But okay, even with great tech and a solid plan, this sounds complex. What are the common mistakes? What are the pitfalls organizations need to avoid when they're developing these plans?
Yeah, they're definitely common traps. A big one is over-reliance on a single staffing vendor. You need diversity there, otherwise you've just created a different kind of bottleneck.
Don't put all your eggs in one basket.
Precisely. Another major issue is a lack of communication with unions or workforce councils, if you have them. Trying to impose a plan without their input or buy-in, that can lead to serious pushback, maybe even legal fights. Also, many organizations fail to practice or simulate their plans. A plan on paper doesn't mean much if people don't know how to execute it under pressure. Those drills we talked about are essential.
Makes sense.
Outdated employee data is another killer. Wrong contact info, incorrect skills listed. It just causes delays when speed is critical. And finally, a common one is underestimating the onboarding time for temps. Even contract workers need some orientation, some training to be effective. You have to factor that ramp-up time into your contingency timeline. Ignoring these pitfalls can really undermine an otherwise good plan.
Good points to keep in mind. So let's say you've built the plan, you've tried to avoid the pitfalls. How do you actually know if it's working? How do you measure success and show that it's worth the effort?
Yeah, measuring effectiveness is key, right? Both for proving its value and for continuous improvement. You absolutely need to track key metrics. Things like your response time to disruption. How fast did you activate the plan? Measure the downtime avoided. Can you quantify how much operational time you didn't lose because you were prepared? Compare your temporary labor costs versus what permanent FTE costs would have been during that period. Does the plan make financial sense?
Looking at the ROI.
Exactly. Also, monitor employee satisfaction during the transition. How did your permanent staff feel about how things were handled? Were they supported? Track fulfillment rates, things like orders shipped, patients treated, calls answered. Did service levels hold up? And maybe keep an eye on attrition among those cross-trained employees. Are you retaining that valuable internal flexibility?
That's a good one.
Yeah. The idea is to build these KPIs into your overall business continuity scorecard. It gives it a clear, objective picture of how resilient you actually are.
That's a really comprehensive set of metrics. Okay, finally, let's look ahead. The future of work is constantly shifting: hybrid models, gig economy, more automation. What should organizations be focusing on next? What's the future of contingency staffing look like?
Good question. Future-ready staffing teams will likely prioritize a few key areas. Expect to see even more reliance on those sophisticated on-demand talent marketplaces. Faster, easier access to specialized skills globally. Also, more powerful automated redeployment tools built into workforce management systems. AI making smarter suggestions about who can fill a gap. Globalized talent sourcing will probably become even more standard, breaking down geographical barriers to find the best skills anywhere.
Tapping into talent everywhere.
Mm-hmm. And scenario-based modeling and workforce software will get more advanced. Moving beyond simple what-ifs to more predictive what-will-likely-happen-if analyses. And critically, I think we'll see a growing recognition of employee wellness as a retention buffer. A healthy, engaged workforce is just inherently more resilient and less prone to unexpected exits.
That makes a lot of sense. Healthy teams stick around.
Exactly. Ultimately, the companies that treat contingency planning as a dynamic, integrated part of their core workforce strategy, not just a compliance exercise, they're the ones who will gain a real competitive edge in whatever the future labor market throws at us.
Mm-hmm.
So just to sum up, contingency planning for staffing.
Mm-hmm.
It's really shifted, hasn't it? It's now a fundamental pillar. Organizational resilience, business continuity, it's essential. It basically empowers businesses not just to survive disruptions, but potentially even thrive through them. At its heart, it's really about embedding foresight, adaptability, right into the very fabric of how an organization thinks about and manages its talent. It's strategic, not just reactive.
So here's something to think about as we wrap up. In an era that feels like it's defined by constant change, by continuous uncertainty, how might proactively embedding this idea of preparedness into your own personal and professional strategies, how might that shift from just being a reactive measure to becoming perhaps your most indispensable strategic advantage?